Good morning and welcome to the June 5th, 2023 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everybody for participating today and in your attendance, and remind you to silence any electronic devices that you may have with you today. I don't believe we do have some people attending electronically. Please mute your screens. Today's meeting is a study and business session with the study session this morning at 10 a.m. and the business session scheduled for this afternoon. However, there's probably a great chance that we're going to get everything business and study session completed this morning. Today's we will be having a public hearing at 10:15 on some surplus property, so that'll be a little bit different on the change of schedule. An official public hearing. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each agenda item. Time will be provided in the business session of our meeting additionally for public input. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand during the meeting. Signaling that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have four commissioners present. Kirk Hudson, our financial officer, is here. Charles Von Reese, our acting attorney, will be here today, is here today. And Rebecca Newman, clerk of the board. Excuse me. Would you please join Corey Schramm today in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and a safety minute?
I pledge allegiance to
the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You can sit down if you want to use the mic. You just have to get really close to the mic, Corey.
Welcome, Corey.
Yeah, just pull it right up.
Okay. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Corey Schramm. I'm the new energy efficiency intern under Jim and Josh. We're working on like some heat pump programs and putting in more efficient pumps for agricultural, like, at orchards and stuff. You guys must have had a bit of a short staffing problem because you hired me. But, I'm here to do your safety minute, I guess. So a few summers ago, I was at a basketball camp, and a bunch of my teammates and I were looking after a bunch of little kids. And we're in this gym for a week, like 12 hours a day. And it's during that heat wave we had. It was 110 outside, and the gym had no AC, so it was getting really hot in this gym. So after the week was over, I was really, really tired. I was really drained, but I thought, it was a great idea. Let's go hiking, right? It's really hot outside. So I hiked to the top of Spider Meadows. I hiked to the glacier, and I'm like, something's not right. I'm not feeling super good. So I ended up laying down in the tent, and the world's just spinning around me. I'm like, something's really weird. So that's what I'm going to talk to you about today is heat exhaustion and heat stroke. These can be very serious, and if left untreated, can lead to some organ damage. It can lead to confusion, nausea, and in severe cases, a coma and even death. So it's really important that you keep track of this. So what you can do to limit the effects of this is drink plenty of water, stay hydrated. So they say that you're supposed to drink a cup of water every 15 minutes, which seems a little excessive, but that's what they say. And you want to limit your alcohol and caffeine intake, both of which will dehydrate you. You don't want to get sunburned, because sunburn will also make it harder for your body to stay cool. So you want to put on plenty of sunscreen and stay in the shade as much as you can. You also want to get acclimated to the heat. So don't immediately go out into the heat, work out an 8-hour day. You know, slowly start going out there. So take plenty of breaks in the shade with water. And it's important if you're older or maybe you're a little overweight. These are also risk factors to keep track of. If you are experiencing heat stroke or you think somebody's experiencing heat stroke, get them in a pool or a lake or something to cool off, or maybe like put ice in their armpits and down their shirt and stuff to try to cool them off. That's my safety minute.
So Corey, help me with intern.
Yep.
How long is your internship?
It's till the end of the summer.
Till the end of the summer. So, yeah. And then where do you go after that?
So I'm at St. Martin's, a little tiny school over in Olympia. Yeah.
Well, very good. And I don't recall if we had an intern present a safety minute to us before. Is this a first?
We did. We did.
Yeah. Okay.
I think we did have. It was quite a while ago.
So one of the joys of orientation is you get to come to the board and present right at a board meeting.
You did an awesome job.
Good for you.
Where are you from, Corey?
I'm from Chelan.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Great.
I think we know the family down there.
Also enjoy, appreciate practicing safety as you duck through the doorway to get in here. I don't see that very often, but anyway, thank you for taking time.
I wasn't sure if that was a side effect of heat exhaustion.
But thanks for being with us today and presenting.
Yeah, thank you.
Add that to your resume.
Sorry.
All right. I'm going to do something a little different. I didn't check in with Kirk on this to make sure it was okay. I would like to just take a minute and have everybody go around and introduce themselves. We do have some new board members here, and for those of us who tend to forget, I'd like to just run through and have you introduce yourselves this morning. I'm also killing some time before our public meeting starts.
Hey, everybody. My name is Rachel Hansen. I'm the Senior Communications Strategist here at the PUD.
Good morning. Aline Underwood, Director of Natural Resources at the PUD.
I'm Kaylee Worthen with the Wenatchee World.
Good morning. I'm Jessica Schwab. I'm the Interim Safety Manager.
Good morning. Vicki Griffin, Real Estate Manager.
Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services.
Good morning, Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer.
Good morning, Justin Erickson, Managing Director for District Services.
Good morning, Chad Bowman, the Interim Director of Engineering and Project Management.
Good morning, I'm Tim McMaster, I'm the Engineering Project Management Manager at Rock Island Powerhouse 1.
Good morning. I'm Jared Watts. I'm the Director of Safety and Human and Organizational Performance for the District.
Good morning. Brett Bickford, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission.
Very good. Thank you all for tolerating that. All right. I need a refresher on names all the time. If you can imagine as being a school superintendent and I think being having a learning disability of learning names is my learning disability. And so I like to practice names, and I have to work on it. So telling you a little bit about myself there. All right. 5 minutes. Are we okay?
Let's go ahead and switch.
Okay, let's go ahead and switch. So we're going to go to, I'm going to jump in. No, let's, I'm sorry, Jared, if you can just hang on just a second. We didn't approve the agenda, so we're going to continue with that. Commissioners, management has not recommended any resolutions be moved to the consent agenda. And so we don't have any and additionally, for the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to be taken off and transferred to the regular agenda upon any request of commissioner member. Do I hear of any such request or additions to the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda stands. Jared, let's go ahead and bring you on up, and we'll do our annual report. Give us a few minutes before we start our public hearing.
Okay. All right. And then just from a timing standpoint, it'd be at 15 after is when the hearing starts?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
And if we need to come back to you, we
yep.
can.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for letting me come and present the safety concern report from 2022 with you. Before I start, I just want to say there's when we look at these numbers, there's really two ways that safety concerns can be brought up, resolved, or captured and then resolved. One goes through our system, which is called Enablon. And that's just a kind of a safety and health database management system where you can track things that are brought up and run them through all the way through preventative or corrective actions. The other one is just informal conversations that aren't captured anywhere, where they may be brought up in a safety meeting, they may be brought up just in a line out meeting. And so the data that we're going to look at today is only what lived in Enablon. We don't have that other data that's happening all the time organically captured in these numbers. So we'll go to the next slide. So here's just a four-year trend of safety concerns when we look at the data. So we see that the trend is going upwards, whereas last year we had 145 safety concerns that were reported into Enablon, our database. Something that did happen last year is that the Enablon database was turned on. So there was a transition year from one software application to another software application. So then the question is, well, what do we do with that data once we have that data? So let's go to the next slide. So on this slide, of the 145 safety concerns that were put into the system, 132 preventative action plans were also generated from that. So you may have a safety concern that was like, hey, we had an extension cord in a walkway. It didn't require a preventative action plan. It was just resolved immediately there on the spot. The ones that couldn't be resolved are the ones that we often find in the system. There's extra steps or extra support that's needed to resolve them. Of that 132, 89 have been completed, 29 are in progress of being completed, and 14 are in the planning phase. And that could be for various reasons as I look at the data. Some may just be that we needed to spend a little more time thinking about what actually would resolve that issue. Some of the other ones may just be bigger. They require more effort. They require more time. So some of the next steps for me and my team as we look at this Enablon data is first, with a new system, you learn all the ways that you wish you would have redesigned it when you first, you know, hindsight is 2020. So this year, we're going to be spending some time on figuring out how do we make the system work better for us so that it's not just simply we've got data in, we've got data out, we're closing out, but how do we get more meaningful measures from that data that is there? So that will be us both cleaning up the data that's in Enablon and then also improving the functionality that's in Enablon to make it work more for us as we try to create a better, a safer work environment for our employees. And then the other thing that we hope to achieve as we look at that data is to be able to, part of that meeting is to be able to pull, you know, common themes, trends. We may have a safety concern that was brought up in one area that would apply district-wide, and it just so happened to pop up here. And so how do we glean that information from that data and then do a more systemic changes, part of that human and organizational performance, systemic changes to our system to make, you know, to improve the environment that our employees work in. So that's the entirety of my presentation today. I'm happy to answer questions. I know we're short on time, either now or after if needed to. So
I just had a couple things here. One, this presentation is a result of the Eddie Bromley fatality, where we one of the things when we looked at the accident investigation, we wanted to make sure that the safety concern process was clear to employees, and we did a survey. And so as a result of that survey, we committed to come back to the board once a year to talk about how we're doing on the safety concern progress. And if you flip back one slide, that one. This one would be one that I think needs a little bit of context around, and that is that when you talk about safety and injuries, we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. There's everything that happens every day below the surface that we don't always see, and that's most 80% or more is below the surface. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it could be one interpretation here is that, oh my gosh, we have more safety concerns, that's bad. Mm-hmm. Our interpretation is that's the stuff below the surface and we want more of those to be reported.
Sure.
And so when you see this trend going up, that's the trend we want to see, because that those are the things that you don't see that aren't mm-hmm. apparent, that people are concerned about something before something happens. And so we want to see that trend keep going up.
Yeah. So, Jared, I would like to bring you back
okay.
when we're finished with the public hearing, because I don't want to rush through this. I've got a couple questions, and I'd like to just take our time on this. This is really important to us, and I don't want to rush through this. So okay. please, we'll bring you back in a few minutes.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. At this time, I'd like to invite Vicki Griffin to come on up, and we are going to this will be our public hearing for surplus property.
Good morning.
Hi. Welcome, Vicki.
Hi. So I was here your last commission meeting, just kind of presenting what this was, the two property owners of adjoining property owners to district property who were interested in kind of cleaning up some boundaries and acquiring some additional property. The process went through our process internally, and it was determined that at least at the staff level, that was something that we were willing to do. And now it's your turn. We'd like to formalize that. Mm-hmm. So the next step is a public meeting to hear any other concerns. I have not received any comments on either one of those from the public. Oh, sorry. Okay. Next page, please. Like that. There we go. I'm sorry. So here's a reminder. The piece in Chelan Falls is a 50-foot parcel surrounded by one property owner. Sorry. It has a small area of just lawn that the property owners have been using for the past number of years, and this is a steep hillside that goes down towards Hydro Park and the Schlanta Powerhouse. The other one is in Leavenworth on the Chump Stick. Our Leavenworth substation is here. The district's headquarters actually is over here, and then we own all of this property. This particular property owner has been taking care of the stuff behind his place for fire management, and he's asked to purchase this 20-foot strip, which will be encumbered by utility easements from the district.
And Vicki, as I recall, that's a kind of a drainage ditch. There. Okay. All right. Commissioners, any questions for Vicki on the information that's been presented to us previously? All right, at this time I will open it up to the public for any comments or questions. They're knocking down the doors, Vicki. All right, well, I'm going to take that as there is no public comment on this. And at this point, I will be looking for a motion from a commissioner on this resolution.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve Resolution 3 as it has been submitted.
I would second.
Okay. Any discussion on this, commissioners? All right. Hearing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Vicki, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vicki.
Way to light up a crowd, Vicki.
Good job. Sorry,
my life. Jared, come on back up, would you? So, as we finished with Kirk, when I saw that number, that was the first response that I had. Mm-hmm. Is, hey, I think that's good news. I don't take that as a bad sign. I think we're doing something better if we're getting more feedback and more reports. So that was my take, and I was kind of anxiously awaiting to hear if that take was correct or not. So.
Yes, you're 100% correct on that. In fact, we want that number to continue to climb. We want to see that. That helps us in a couple of ways. One, it shows our employees feel like they have a voice, they want to share it, and that they're listened to.
And I think that message from us as commissioners is we want that message to go back. We want to see that type of thing happening, and that's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whenever that number is low, we should all be concerned. So it's good to see that it's rising. And I think that was, I really appreciated that context, because that was the other thing. I've sat in a lot of safety committee meetings. I've sat in a lot of safety meetings, and I've spent a lot of time out in the field since I joined at the end of February. And one of the takeaways I had from this data, when I first looked at it, I said, this number's not right, because I was watching safety concerns be brought up, and I was watching them being addressed. I was watching those organic conversations happening, and there was nothing that was going into the system, per se, to say that actually occurred. Now, all systems will be like that for us. They're only capturing part of it. But it was really neat for me to see that those were happening consistently and constantly, almost throughout every single meeting or interaction that I had in the field.
So what happens when those organic conversations occur to formalize them to become part of the data and record of discussions?
Yeah, that will be the trick for me and the safety team, is how do we make the software, the application that we have to capture that, a tool and not necessarily just something I do after the fact of capturing, or an extra step. So we'll be working to streamline that part of the system to help that facilitate that process better.
I'd just add that, some of those conversations that Jared is talking about, the less formal ones, the thing we want the system to do is help us make sure nothing falls through the cracks. So a lot of those informal conversations, if they can be resolved right there on the spot, that's great. But it's the ones that can't be resolved right on the spot that we want to make sure we get in here. And then I echo Jared's sentiment of trying to figure out a way to also capture those informal conversations, because there's information that's shared there that could be beneficial elsewhere in the district rather than just that one conversation. But the key for this system is that's our way of making sure if somebody brings up a concern and it can't be resolved on the spot, that it doesn't fall through the cracks.
Right.
It's still hanging out there on that other bar chart that unresolved that we want to make sure we don't lose it. And just to be really clear, we're struggling with the new system. That Enablon system is a new system, and it's been a struggle for us, and we're still working our way through that. And I know Jared's trying to have the safety team get their arms around how to use that system and how we can get the information out of it. But it is.
Why is it a struggle?
If we go look at some of these that where they're in the planning or in the progress stage, some of the way some things were established early on in the system made it so things were really difficult to close out, even if they were simple things that have already been done. It could be through user access rights, like my coordinators maybe not having the ability to push something all the way through the system. So those are some of the things that definitely got in the way of it. Then I think it's just, in my experience, I've built several of these systems, and whatever you build the very first time is never what you end up with at the end of the day. And I think for us, it's just that iterative process of challenging the system, going, oh, this was our intention when we built this. Is it doing what we intended it to do, or do we need to pivot and tweak?
Yeah.
I think that's where we'll be spending a good amount, that will be where we'll be spending our focus on Enablon from that standpoint.
Yeah, you don't want it to be cumbersome where incentivizes people from finishing up the work.
Yes.
Any other comments, questions? Jared, I'm glad you're here doing that. I appreciate the fact. I am very excited that you're here taking that on, and I'm going to be looking forward to hearing more about that in the future.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jared.
Well, I'll be able to give Randy a hard time because we have completed our morning session at 10:25 in the morning. I think that's a new
that's record. A new record.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead and move into our business session and move into the consent agenda. There have been no changes on that. Commissioners, do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
One second.
All those in favor of the approval of the consent agenda, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. So we are on resolution number 8.
So I'd like to invite Chad Bowman up. Resolution number 8 is a resolution approving bid advertisement award and contract signature for Tumwater Dam Foundation Maintenance, bid number 22-12126. Chad?
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Chad Bowman. I'm the Interim Director of Engineering and Project Management. I'm filling in this morning for Sam Dilley, the project manager, who's on vacation today. As Kirk said, the resolution seeks authorization to advertise and then award Tumwater Foundation Maintenance. Since the last time repair work was performed at Tumwater in 1997, flood events have moved large rocks downstream and to some extent have undermined the apron of that facility. The proposed work is necessary to meet dam safety and integrity requirements, and it provides time while the district develops a long-term plan for the facility. Are there any questions?
I think what you presented previously is pretty well explanatory of what the process is. I was curious and what the timing is. You have to do it a little water, I assume. So it'd be...
the desire is to really start construction the early fall, early September, and hope to wrap that up by the end of the year.
Okay. Sounds good.
I drove through there yesterday. You definitely wouldn't want to be doing
it now. Go ahead. I was just going to point that out, Kirk. I went through there as well. It's ripping. It's ripping right now. I can see why those boulders have been moved downstream.
Took some family members down there, and we stood on that lower ledge by the ladder. And,
all right.
It was really misty and ripping through there. So okay.
I would just add on this one. We did a fair amount of outreach with this project last year in preparation for this maintenance project, and we did get mixed results from the public in terms of the long-term maintenance and what the purpose of the dam and whether it should be there long-term. And regardless, this maintenance is necessary so that we make sure the dam stays there if it's going to be there. I would say that we committed as part of that outreach effort to develop a long-term plan that was clear what we were doing with the project, the purpose of it, at which point it can be revisited at any time. But in the meantime, we have to do what we need to do to make sure the dam is safe and not going to fail. And that's what this work is for.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on into resolution number 9.
Tim, you want to come on up? Resolution number 9 is resolution approving bid advertisement award and contract execution for the Rock Island Dam Spillway Expansion Joint Repairs. And Tim is here to share with us the work that he has planned. This was something that Brett shared earlier with the new cracks on a couple of the piers, and this is the work to try and mitigate that.
Yeah. Good morning. I'm Tim McMaster. I'm the EPM manager over on the Powerhouse 1 side of Rock Island Dam. And this resolution, as Kirk noted, is to finish up repairs to expansion joints on the roadway and the spillway of Rock Island Dam. It's a little bit of a background. This structure was originally built in the, 90 years ago in the 1930s. And with concrete structures like this, typically in 1950s or before, they didn't have the technology we have today, so there's a reaction called ASR, or I have a hard time pronouncing it sometimes, alkali silica reaction, that has a net effect over time of having the concrete slowly increase in volume. And the net effect that we're seeing now is that in these roadways between each of the piers of the spillway, this concrete grows and these expansion joint gaps close up to the point where these sections start pushing on each other and eventually start pushing in bad directions on the piers. Here in the recent past, there was repairs noted and performed under a separate contract on Pier 0 or Pier 1. Recently, additional, so there was certain expansion joints opened up at that time. And since then, other cracks have been noted. And so the determination was made that we really need to just go and open up all of these expansion joints in the remainder of the spillway. So that's the basis behind this resolution.
So it'll be the same process as we've gone through with the other one?
Essentially, yes. We have done some testing on certain the joint filler material in some of, and we've detected asbestos in some of the areas in the remaining joints. So that will be an additional mitigating action on this, is to abate and properly remove and dispose of that material as well as we go through.
Okay. Any other questions?
No, I would just like to comment that it was really evident when I was there, and given the tour. So had not been aware of concrete growth prior to this. So thank you for taking care of it and staying on top of it.
Oh, our pleasure.
And do we have any questions from the public? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Commissioners, do I have a motion to approve resolutions 8 and 9, reduce 10 separately?
So moved.
Can I do that, or do I 10 separately?
Okay, so I'm moving to approve resolutions 8 and 9 as presented.
And I would second.
Second. Any questions, comments? All those in favor of resolution 8 and 9 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Resolutions 8 and 9 pass. All right, let's move into resolution number 10.
And Tim is taking this one as well.
All right.
Tim is actually responsible for a lot of the work going on Powerhouse 1 and Spillway, so thanks, Tim.
We'll move on into this one. This budget revision resolution is in regards to our ongoing work to upgrade Unit B3 in its modernization effort. I'll do a little background of some of the benefits of this particular ongoing work. First is to help meet our strategic objective to improve our hydro capability to keep upgrading units and increase our capacity at Rock Island Dam to ensure that we continue reliable operation. These particular units that we're working on right now were the initial four units on the Columbia River, so they were installed 90 years ago. And so they're requiring quite a bit of extensive work in order to bring them back up into reliability. Some of that upgrade work is involving improvements, notably fish-friendly turbines, greaseless components. We'll see some pictures of those here in the next slides. Another benefit that we're starting to realize here with these units is that we've been making a shift to transition into the execution of this work with our own internal resources. As we go through this kind of a generational change in our workforce, these type of outages and modernizations actually present us with a pretty great opportunity to allow parts of our workforce that are in the early stages of their career to really get knee-deep into these units, into this powerhouse, and so that they generate the skill sets and the knowledge and that'll carry them not just through their careers, but benefit the district over that amount of time too. So One other one noted is we do have encroachment agreements with Grant County, and to have these units available increases the benefit and value to the district. If we go to the next slide. So here are these next slides. You'll see some of the work that's going on. The first slide here is a comparison of the original runner that was put in the 1930s versus what's going in today. The original runner was a fixed blade, but they were manually adjustable. Over time, you know, that adjustment didn't play out too well. We ended up welding blades in fixed positions over time. It was filled with grease at the time, so there's been efforts to mitigate the effect of that. It wasn't quite as efficient or fish-friendly. There's larger gaps. There's, if you look at the hubs where the blades join the midsection or the hub, there's larger gaps there. There's larger gaps between the edges of the blade and then the discharge ring that it runs in, so there was less efficiency. Looking down to the lower right is a picture of one of the replacement runner hubs. It's fewer blades. They're fixed pitch, so they don't have to be adjusted, which also eliminates the grease out of the assembly. There's a lot tighter, smoother fit between the blades and the hub, and then also between the periphery of the blades and the discharge liner. You'll notice on the outside of the blades there's a little bit of a lip there, which also helps to mitigate cavitation effects of water going around the edges and causing damage. Another design improvement to help mitigate cavitation is the fact that those blades are all stainless steel, which is a lot more resistance to cavitation over time.
Go to the next slide. Question, can we go back to that?
Oh, sure.
For a minute. Is this new one, has our staff been involved with the building of that?
On Unit B4 was the previous contractor, but they're just getting set up to start assembling the B3 assembly here shortly. So,
but not as far as the turbine runner. The picture on the lower right, our staff was not involved in that.
Not this picture. Yeah. No.
You'll see some in the following pictures where our staff's involved.
Okay.
Yeah. We can move to the next page.
I've just heard that there's great pride kind of coming out from this work by our staff, and that's great to hear.
Yeah. No, our CM resources have been doing a wonderful job. I'm very proud of our engineering team for organizing and getting all of this work and also the dynamic we have, communication and execution between our craft capability and staff and our engineering on site. It's allowed us to increase our quality of build, work through, discover, and then work through component issues, and then within the end result is a significant increase in assembly quality from what we're seeing right now. And probably one of the biggest examples right now is this picture on the upper left. Of this is what you're looking at. There is the part of the rotor assembly for Unit B3. And what this consists of is there's a welded main frame. They call it a spider, which is a welded structure. And then part of what creates, you want a like a flywheel effect with these, so there's a lot of mass that gets assembled onto the outer periphery, and that's what you're looking at here are a whole bunch of, they call them laminations. They're individual pieces of sheet metal, hundreds of them, all laser cut to within a thousandth of an inch of tolerance.
and there's hundreds of them. And that's what you're looking at here, is all of those all individually stacked. You'll see what looks like the little in each of these slots on the outsides, those are little keeper fixtures in order to hold all these slots in tolerance. There's also holes through all of them that close tolerance rods go through that have 2 or 3 thousandths of tolerance. And our crews have been able, and this whole thing when it's assembled, this blue fixture you see on top is called a sweep arm. You can rotate that around in order to keep this thing round and tight within thousandths of an inch, essentially. Mm-hmm. And the job our craft crew did on this is pretty remarkable compared to what I've seen in other places. That's been a great exercise there. Part of this effort has also been fixturing and tooling for our crews. The blue fixture part you see on top is called that rotor sweep. That was completely redesigned and rebuilt by our engineering and CM internally.
Cool.
In order to be able to turn it around and maintain a whole lot tighter ability to measure. Other improvements, just assembly tools. You know, the guys were able to discover for example, a battery-operated torque gun that we could individually tighten all these studs down with, that saved probably 2 or 3 days of the way that would be done previously. Down in the lower right, I don't know if there are any questions on the rotor before we move on, or we'll move on to
that. I just have a general question. You know, in general, mm-hmm. everything that's going on at Rock Island with the Powerhouse 2 and the remodelization there, I understand that we're going to take on some of those responsibilities down the road on our own. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
As we go
Powerhouse 1, so.
My concern is, you know, we have, as we do this, our manpower is going to be stretched, I would imagine, mm-hmm. with all of the things going on, if we intend to do it ourselves, some of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm just wondering if we're staffed up in order to manage that now, or is that something we're going to have to do down the road?
I was going to say, we haven't made the decision yet on whether or not to take on more on Powerhouse 2.
Well, I know, it's the talk. But yeah. I mean, but those are things that I know that it's a lot of work. But on Powerhouse 1, I get back to that. No, I can remember years ago we're talking about precision mm-hmm. in doing that, and how our own crews were learning as we were going on. Mm-hmm. And so it's really kind of pleasing to see the progress that we're doing for the staff. So.
And you make a great point as far as, you know, balancing our resources. It definitely helps to have the type of communication that we have with our central maintenance group in order to forecast. And you know, sometimes we focus on this and then a surprise happens, you know.
Sure.
and the ability to transfer between those type of tasks and activities.
How many more of these units do we have?
We have B3, and then after this we have B2 and B1 of the smaller units.
Yeah.
Then we also have on our larger 6 Kaplan units, we're in the middle of a turbine repairs outage on B6, where we're upgrading and fixing some design errors on those components. And then that will also take place with B9, and then here around mid next year we'll start a full modernization of unit B8. Are the remaining units? So.
And what is the timeline around that to complete all these units?
Essentially, we've got 2 main crews going. One's focused on the small units, one on the big units. We're looking at around mid to late 2026 currently, the way the schedule projects this work. So yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, well,
move on to the discharge liner. The picture you see on the bottom right. The discharge liner is the kind of the area of the water passage where the runner that you saw on the previous slide runs in that area. So over the last 90 years, there's been a lot of damage, a lot of repairs, a lot of cavitation. A lot of the repairs have been done with interesting materials available at the time. So we've had challenges with really soft, really hard areas. Some areas were so hard that they would literally break off machining cutters as we were trying to turn them. The similar effect that we talked about on the spillway is also playing out in this powerhouse where concrete is grows between the units, and over time they literally become oblong. And so we have to go to the effort of restoring that, the shape of those, and also the alignment of the units so that everything's straight up and down again. So part of this discharge liner was to literally cut out. The machine you see is a machine that's meant to both machine and weld and drill and does quite a few things. The very top 13 inches was completely removed and replaced with some pre-made stainless sections. The remainder from that part down to the bottom of where you see the base of that machine was all machined out down to a certain depth, and then this machine was fitted out with welding equipment, and the entire thing was welded up with stainless steel. And then what you're seeing in the picture right now is the final machining to the final profile, which is a curved profile to match the runner itself. Part of that is the work was ensuring that as we weld it, since weld, heats and shrinks and pulls on things, about 180 holes were drilled into this, into the surrounding concrete, and anchors, 1-inch anchor bolts, 180 of them were all put in, welded out, and in order to maintain the structural integrity of the themselves. So, and that's another aspect that was redesigned by our engineering and in coordination with our craft is a change in design of how those anchors were welded out. It was a pretty good innovation that saved a few days of time there, too, that hopefully we can employ on the remaining units. Any questions on the discharge liner?
What's the drop in that length of drop through that discharge?
It's about 2 to 3 feet, or no, actually 3 to 4 feet. I apologize. I should know that number right off the top of my head, but about the top foot, a little over foot, was replaced with all new material, and the rest was machined out and overlay welded and then remachined. So moving on to the budget overview and the reason for this request. Current approved project budget is at $19.4 million. This request is a motion to increase the total capital budget by $5.6 million to a total budget of $25 million. Driving factors behind this increase was there's quite a few unanticipated costs of machining, repair, refurbishment to the discharge liner. One of these included the need to provide the rescue crew coverage. This area down here is considered to be a permit-required confined space. And as such, you have to have people available all the time to be able to rescue somebody out of that area if need be. As we're having a contractor do this work, we ended up increasing the number of people available for that activity while this was going on. There's quite a few quality issues with
supplied components that we've, as we go through an inventory and inspect, we decide or we determine that they don't match the original drawing and tolerances. In addition, there's several components that have been stored outside for significant amounts of time that we've gone through with our contractors currently and uncovered these, inspected them, made note of them, reprotected them, ones that are for the future units, and addressed and mitigated some parts required remachining, rewelding, that type of work in order to restore them to a design tolerances and usable condition. Another is, as you know, we're looking at these previous slides. Unit B3 is the first of these units that we're assuming the work with our own craft personnel and with engineering help. And so we've been procuring missing parts. We've been building tooling. We've been procuring tooling, working on our setups and procedures. So kind of a learning curve on the first one. And then just a general labor and material cost escalations from the time these units were originally budgeted to today, and particularly over the last year or two. So.
Well, it sounds like you've learned a lot. And the overruns here might be avoided on the future ones.
That's the intent. Anyway, the next slide is the proposed motion.
Do I have any other questions or comments for Tim? Gary.
Tim, I the only comment I want to share with you is that about 2 years ago, in the middle of COVID, I decided that I needed something to do, a little project, and so my son had a Honda lawnmower, great lawnmower. It was self-propelled, and I thought, wow, I'd like to have that lawnmower. But the problem is he lives on the west side, so the deck was all rusted from leaving grass and stuff over there. So I was like, well, I can get a deck, and I'll just put a new deck on it, and it'll be slick as a whistle. That was 2 years ago, and I promptly went in there and disassembled it, ordered the deck, got the deck, put the motor on the deck, and then became sidetracked. And it sits in my garage 2 years later, all the pieces being carefully labeled and put in little trays and boxes. And I decided a few weeks ago, well, I'm going to get back to this project. Now, it's a much different scale than what we're talking about here, but it talks about having to come back to a project. And I swear I had that extra lever to raise the tires and the wheels, but it's missing now. And I had to go down to Honda to buy it. The cost today is much more than it was 2 years ago to try to get this stupid little lever that just raises the height of the wheels. And along with that are several nuts and bolts and screws that the Gremlin has them. I don't know where the Gremlin puts them, but the Gremlin's got them. So to me, that is a lesson on a much smaller scale for what we're talking about today, is that things happen over the course of time. And things that you take most great care with trying to put somewhere safe, the Gremlin comes in and takes them, or they find that they got a little bit of rust on them or whatever the problem might be. So much smaller scale than what we're talking about here today, but perhaps for some of our listeners in the audience who might listen to the video today, it happens, and I think you need to bring it down to a real personal level that no matter what you're trying to restore or put back together again, things end up missing if you sit for any length of time. So I certainly understand what you explained today. I just wanted to share that with you. Oh,
thank you.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
Okay. Well, if there are no other further questions or comments. Do I have a motion to approve this resolution?
I move to approve resolution number 10.
It's just a clarification, just a motion.
Oh.
No resolution. Just a motion for a budget revision.
I move for doing?
We're doing a budget revision.
Yep. All right. So is there a movement need? Mm-hmm. Oh, you have it right here. Okay. To increase the total budget for capital project RI170013, RIPH1B3 modernization in the amount of $5,600,000. The current total project budget amount is $19,400,000. The revised total project budget would be $25 million. Thank you.
Yep. I'll second that motion.
Any further discussion? Gary.
I'd just like to take this opportunity to talk about how proud I am of our employees in pulling this project together. Performing this modernization work, it struck me as I'm listening that it creates a great deal of value to the district and to the district staff and employees and to the customer owners of the Chelan PUD, that we all industries across not just the United States, but the world are facing a maturing workforce. And with that, a lot of retirement. And I'm all for retirement, but what it does is there's a brain knowledge drain that occurs during retirement, where you have individuals with years and years and years of experience that when they retire, a lot of times that knowledge is not passed along in the same degree or capacity that it was maintained in that person's head. And when we do this modernization, especially as we utilize our staff to do this modernization, it gives them a hands-on skill set that is maybe a chance of a lifetime. How many hydro projects are being built in the world? And how many employees have the ability to actually physically do that work and learn from that work and create, once again, rebuild that skill set? And the skill set is a modern skill set. It's brought about by the modernization and the eco-friendly employment of things like oilless hubs and no grease. This is all new technology that is modern-day technology. And so we have the benefit of exposing our employees to how this works. And these employees will be with the district for many years, we hope, of course, and with that will be their knowledge. And that knowledge will make the district really kind of unique amongst hydro operators across the country, because we've done it hands-on. And not only that, but we're transitioning. That's the other side of this, is it's no longer a hub that requires grease. We can do it without grease, and that's more eco-friendly. And so, it again, benefits our customer owners. It benefits the district. You know, 90-year-old equipment is... Just try to put that into comparison. You have a 90-year-old car, right? How much maintenance does that need? It needs maintenance. And if you don't do the maintenance, and sometimes people don't do maintenance on the things that they own, we all know what happens, right? Over time, eventually it stops working. So the value that this modernization project brings to the customer owners of Chelan County is tremendous, and it's not to be underestimated, that this will provide for hydro generation, green carbon-free hydro generation for many years into the future. It's huge. So I just, as one commissioner, wanted to state how proud I am of our employees for undertaking this task, for taking on the job of learning how to do this, and for being innovative and leading the way with the greaseless hubs and the oilless units that are being employed. This is state-of-the-art stuff, and so I'm just really proud of our staff.
Thank you for that.
I appreciate your enthusiasm, your passion. Awesome.
Okay. All those in favor of this budget revision signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? I want to keep saying resolution. The budget revision is approved. Thank you very much. Tim, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks. All right. At this point, manager items.
Got one item. I was going to have Charles share. We had a error of omission at the last board meeting on one of the resolutions. It wasn't exactly clear on, it was the property lease, the people property lease, in terms of the rate and whether that was for a month or a year. And I'll let Charles just share the error corrected on the resolution.
Yeah, there's not much more to share than that. It was correct on page one of the resolution. On page two, it said monthly instead of annually, and there's a corrected resolution in your packet today, and you guys don't need to take any action right now in this meeting.
Great.
That's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Charles.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Okay. Lisa, commission travel.
Feeling mature now, I have to bring my glasses with me. Join the club.
Welcome to my world.
Don't think we didn't notice you called us mature. I'm getting old, but I'm not that mature. So we have some travel coming up in a while in June. Commissioners Arsenault and McKenna going to Waputa. And then the APPA conference in Seattle. I have Commissioners Arsenault and Allen checking in the 17th, but Commissioners McKenna and Smith checking in the 15th. And please make sure you review the packets I gave you, so if anything is incorrect, I can get it taken care of before the last minute. Commissioner Allen has NWPPA boot camp in towards the end of June, and we have Waputa committee meetings in Suquamish, Clearwater Casino, July 11 to 14. Commissioner Allen is going to the PNWR. Are you supposed to spell it out, or is it a real word?
No, I think you have it right.
PNWR Annual Summit, middle of July. And then we have Commissioner Arsenault traveling to D.C. for the APPA Policymakers Summer Fly-In. And we don't have any reservations or holds after that point.
What's the date of the Waputa July meeting?
July 12 to 14.
Okay.
Okay. Do you have any questions or anything I can help you with?
Rebecca, can you help get those on the calendars for those of us that are going? Do we know?
All your travel information should be on your calendar.
It's not showing up, so I'll check into that.
I can too.
Thank you. Okay.
Anything else?
Commissioners? Mm-mm. All right. Thank you, Lisa, for the update. Commission items. Harry.
I'd just like to report on the NWPPA annual conference, which was held in Anchorage recently. At that conference, former Commissioner Ann Congdon received an illustrious award. She was up there in person to receive it, and so she was quite honored, and it was for her involvement and support in NWPPA. So the conference itself was quite a success, covering a great deal of topics. Was a multi-day conference, and one of the presenters that probably stuck in my memory more and I'm going to do a little bit more research on, was a futurist who came and spoke about visioning. And this is actually an occupation amongst some highly intelligent people that combine many different fields of data to make a guess as to what the future might look like in your particular area of endeavor. And in this particular case, it had to do with utilities in general and the demands that might be placed on the utility industry in the next 10 to 20 years. Fascinating. and some of his comments and thoughts were really extremely thought-provoking in terms of the additional demands for power as we shift and segue into more of an electric-centric world going forward. So, fascinating presentation, certainly held the audience in general spellbound, I think. He's got a website. So I'm going to do a little bit more research on that. Anyone who has some interest on it, just can ask me, and I'll be sure to get some data.
With what we talked about in our last workshop.
So. It does. Yeah, it's very fascinating. Yeah.
Great. Anybody else? All right. Follow up on delegation of action items from our previous board meeting.
Yep, have a few of them just to circle back on, and mainly they were from the External Affairs Legislative Reports. We had three of them. Kelly Scott provided the commissioners with the breakdown of the state budget. That was on a June 2nd email that was asked for. And then Kelly Scott also provided further information on who is impacted by the proposed decarbonization bill. That was also in the June 2nd email. And then External Affairs provided more information on the legal challenges to the Climate Commitment Act, also on a June 2nd email, and didn't have any new action items from today.
Okay. Yeah. Commissioners, anything on today that we need to follow up on? At this time, I will open it up to public comment. I don't see anybody from the public here, so we'll move on. Do we have any other matters of general business they meet as may necessarily come before the commission today? Hearing none, we will be moving recess into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by statute. We will be doing that for how long?
30 minutes.
30 minutes. We are in recess. We're coming out of executive session. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission today? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.